Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. I am Jennifer Madame Perry. I will be your hostess and your cruise director tonight. Most of you know this is a special night for Madame Perry's Salon. This is a show that we had to, it just didn't go down last week. I don't know why. People keep talking about some kind of Mercury and retrograde and silly things like that. I don't know what it is. I personally think that Veronique was maybe she had a hold of my cauldron. I'm not really sure what that lady does in the kitchen, but that's none of my business. Anyway, as some of you know, Madame Perry Salon began as a blog a few years ago. I wanted to create the feel of the old cultural, literary, artsy salons of the past in Europe and Asia and the UK, and I took it to a blog, and now it's live and on the air around the world, so I can bring you fabulous people. The first person, and I think everyone listening tonight knows exactly how excited I am to have these guests. The first one, this woman is fabulously the darkful, that is her, not delightful. This mademoiselle is the darkful. She is much beloved and much cherished at Cabaret. She's called the Weird Val of Dark Cabaret, the original mad sonicist, the spooky polkanista, the performance artiste and MC-ist. She's also a model and authorist. One fan described her as simultaneously ooh-la-la and laugh-out-loud hilarious. And her fellow music artist, who obsessed with the punk portion of the genre, Mad Veronique, produces the steam. She puts the steam and the sizzle in steampunk. Veronique Chevalier, darling, would you please come on into Madame Perry's Salon? Welcome, Veronique. Veronique, are you with me there? Veronique. Oh, Jasper, are you with me here?
I'm here. I'm on the line. Can you hear me?
Well, Jasper, I can hear you just fine. I just can't hear a lady Veronique, and she appears to still be in a hole.
Am I scared of her away?
I hope not.
I really hope not. Too.
Maybe she doesn't understand my
rumors aren't true.
Well, you know, we're on separate coasts. She's on the East Coast, and I'm in the South, so maybe she couldn't understand my accent.
Oh, gosh. I should have not.
We should have gotten subtitles.
Or maybe it's just, even for the West Coast, she's so far out that she's possibly communicating with us from a completely different time zone.
Yeah, well, you know how slow we are down here in the South, so that's going to take a while. That's what you call a light year. All right, well, I'm going to wait for Miss Veronique to call in. It kind of scares me, though, a little bit, Jasper. It frightens me. Because
It's just like one of those murder mystery movies where one by one, all of your guests are going to get bumped off. You're going to sort of open a sonic closet and we're just going to tumble out.
Yeah,
Veronique's the first.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be. I see that. But sort of like Midsummer Mysteries. That place is... You ever watched that show?
Oh, yes.
Oh, Midsummer Murders. Yeah. We always bet on who's going to be the first to go. But Veronique, I don't know. I get the feeling that she's hiding somewhere around here with a little special surprise. So
most probably. I would have put it past her. She wouldn't be the first person, I would imagine, to get bumped off. Usually that's a sleepy vicar, isn't it?
I don't even know what that means. What?
A sleepy vicar. It's the sort of slightly overweight, slightly corpulent vicar who gets a little bit too hot in the sun and dabs his forehead with a handkerchief, who is found hanging from the rafters in the opening reel. And that's usually the first person to get bumped off in a murder mystery, isn't it?
Oh, well, that'd be a rather sticky wicket, wouldn't it?
It would be, rather.
Yeah. I'm trying to get to the thing. Veronique, darling, are you here?
You hear me?
Ah, there you are. There is my Veronique. Veronique.
Très bien.
Have you been hiding in a corner?
Well, I don't think I am a sweaty vicar quite yet, Monsieur Jasper. But I have done a few
vicar
in my time. For a fee, of course.
Well, I have... Veronique, I am so sorry. Je suis sorry that we've had some difficulties again. I know last week was far worse, and as you know, I drove across, I think, 3 state lines trying to get last week's show on. So, you know, I wanted to introduce you first, and then we could bring Jasper in, but I introduced you. So would you, Veronique, darling,
oui.
I need a little help from you, sweetie.
Oui, oui.
I wanted, you know, you see over here that we have a special seat for Jasper. And, of course, being a gentleman, he wasn't going to sit until you sat. So if you would just direct him to his seat.
Oh, with pleasure. Monsieur Jasper, won't you please come and asseyez-vous? Which
okay,
means you have a seat.
You will be gentle, though, won't you?
Here we go.
I will try. You know, the Marquis de Sade is our national sinner. You know, there's national saints like in Ireland, it's St. Patrick, but in France we have a national sinner, and that is the Marquis de Sade. So with his assistance, I shall be happy to give Monsieur Jasper a seat.
Merci. And if you would, just be very still. Jasper, could you hold still just a moment? We need to fasten you in.
Okay.
Are you ready there?
Yes. That's a little tight.
Okay, good.
You're
so handy with that thing.
Yes, yes. Well, oh, here, would you hand me the blindfold, please?
Which one?
Oh, I think the black leather one with the spikes would be sufficient.
Could you not put it on with the spikes on the inside, please?
Well,
that's the one you're sitting on, sweetheart.
Oh, well, I wasn't going to say anything, but it is a little uncomfortable.
Oh, well, we like to kill you with kindness.
And you know, Jasper, I don't know how it is in where you live, but in America, everyone's into crafting and DIY stuff. And, you know, why buy something for $5 when you can spend $92 on crafts and make it yourself? And Veronique has become a bit crafty. You may not know.
Oh.
In fact, here's what I'm going to do. She's going to make one of her new crafts. I think she's selling this on the dark Etsy site, the Etsy from the Netherworld. And I'm not going to say what it is, but we're just going to put the microphone close to her little craft table and listen very carefully and see if you can tell us what Veronique is making in her craft studio.
Being a horror author, I'm gifted, or one might say cursed, with a rather dark imagination. So you probably don't want to know where my mind's going at the moment.
Oh, well, I rated this as just an adult show, so please. Okay, maybe not. You keep your little fantasy to yourself then.
Yes, they're much better that way.
All right. Well, now that we've got you strapped in, I want to at least go ahead and give you somewhat of a proper introduction to Jasper Bark. We've already had a cold open with you. Jasper, You don't like to write your autobio, so you gave us nothing. I asked my staff what you wrote, and they said, so we had to go figure this out. You are an award-winning author of 4 cult novels, including the very highly acclaimed Way of the Barefoot Zombie. I watched that video over and over and over. I love it so much. He's written 12 children's books. Now, children's books, is this like for the Addams Family children or just any children?
Actually, it goes all the way from preschool to young adult. None of them are horror, really, at the moment yet, though.
Well, childhood is enough of a horror as it is.
God,
yeah, this is true.
Yes. 12 children's books, hundreds of comics and graphic novels.
That's
and
right.
You've been translated into 5 languages.
Mm-hmm.
Your work has
in
been
French,
used.
I hope.
French, yes, actually.
Good. Okay, you have my approvals then.
Yeah.
Could you give me some of your books in Spanish?
I'm not sure about Spanish, actually. If I'm honest, France and Italy are where one of my books, which is called Inventions, Leonardo da Vinci, which is a children's pop-up book, was actually a bestseller.
Mm. Ah, très bien.
Très bien. Muy bueno. Qué rico.
Bellissimo.
See, we're trying to share the love around the world, Jasper. You've got to give us a little help, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
So I imagine it would be called Invention. Leonardo da Vinci. So I don't know what its title is in French, if I'm honest with you, because the French publishers never sent me a complimentary copy.
Oh, well, I cannot speak for them. I am sorry.
Yeah, not your problem. Actually, just before I came on air, somebody sent me a review for my latest graphic novel, which is for grown-ups, called Bloodfellas. And it starts with a quote that I rather like. Could I share it with you?
I wish you would.
Oui, oui.
It says, it starts with, you know that old saying, it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. That's what I imagine it's like in Jasper Bark's mind. A truly terrifying place where nightmares are born and all manner of twisted scenarios are brought into being. I thought was quite nice. And he is not the first of you to have said it either, actually. So,
aww.
Which I think is quite a good introduction to my fiction.
I like that introduction. You know,
yes,
it reminds me of an interview in Vanity Fair once with Sharon Stone, the actress.
Mm-hmm.
And she said her psychologist that says, or psychoanalyst said, that her mind was a dangerous place and she shouldn't go in there alone.
That's a brilliant quote. But do you know, I don't know if you have this yourself, Veronique, but the majority of horror writers I've met are some of the single most gentle, sweet, kind, good-natured and well-balanced individuals you could meet.
Well, that's of course, because we get our demons out with our creativity, and then we are able to have our happy life.
It's like a sort of literary purging, isn't it? You bleed the poison off into a story, and then it's exercised from you.
Yes,
in a way,
it is.
It's almost like a public service. It's certainly
it
a heck of a lot cheaper than psychoanalysis.
It is,
and it's
much less cause for the criminal justice system to work when you actually aren't truly murdering people, but just writing about it.
Yes. Well, there's an inordinate number of human beings who've probably been saved by that very action.
Yes, I agree. In my case, it is the music. In your case, it is the literature.
Yes.
And in my case, it's just a little bell here, a little practical joke there.
In your case, it is a basket. Or a basket, as we would say in France. Oh, good. I don't have to quit my day job. Very good. Thank you for laughing.
Don't forget to tip your waitresses.
Yeah, we'll be here all week, folks. We'll be here for the rest of my life. Which isn't very far. So, guys, so now let me tell a little bit more about you, Jasper, since you cut me off there.
So sorry.
No. You did it so deftly. Your work has been used in schools throughout the UK to improve literacy. I like that a lot. And you've been awarded.
Is that the Hounds of the Baskerville in the background?
I was thinking it's the Hellhounds, actually.
Hellhounds. No, but I know the Hellhounds, actually. I wish one of them would call in. His name is Rick Richards. And there was a band called the Hellhounds.
There's a wonderful blues track by Robert Johnson as well, one of the fathers of the Delta Blues, called Hellhounds on My Trail.
Oh,
well, he would know. He would know. He sold his soul.
Absolutely. I think he had more than a few.
So, Robert Johnson.
You were about to say I've been awarded a few awards.
Well, thank you. This is horror. Yes, that was just before. And I think that comes in the sequence of the show run down, just before you say how fabulous it is to be with Veronique and myself. But yeah, this is Horror Award for your last anthology, Dead Air.
That's right. And I won an Educational Readers Award for a series of graphic novels called Battle Cries, and a Fringe First at the Edinburgh International Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Well, congratulations, Monsieur. I am so honored for you.
Well, thank you so much.
Felicidades. Other awards? Tell us more about the others. Tell us about the Fringe Festival. My friend Janie Godley performs there a lot.
It's up in the very, very north of our country, in Edinburgh, which is one of the single most beautiful cities in the whole of Europe. It's really quite breathtaking. It's built on a hill, and it has a giant castle right in the centre of the city, which is really quite spectacular. And once a year, for a whole month, they give over the entire centre of the city to any number of actors, vagabonds, musicians, comedians, and the entire place is alive, with people begging you to come to their shows, performing on street corners, doing anything to swell their audience from two people to four, which is your average audience there. I wrote a show that was called Can I Use Bad Language?
Oui.
Oh, oui.
It was called, the show I wrote, it was called Fuck the State in Five Easy Lessons. And it actually...
say that again.
It was called Fuck the State.
Oh, okay, I just couldn't hear it. I thought it said fuck the stage or suck the stage. I thought, what? Fuck the stage in Five Easy Lessons. Okay, that's got it.
And that was that actually caused a huge stir. The local the tabloid press here in Britain got really upset and annoyed about it. A few members of my cast got arrested trying to hand out leaflets for it in the street, which was an alarming thing to see. And it was put up for a Fringe First, but because it was a little bit too considered a little bit too controversial, they kind of couldn't give it the award. And the next year, I wrote a one-woman show for an amazing actress and singer and comedian called Terry Neeson, and that was called A Glasgow Kiss. And she'd been up for a Fringe First year before and didn't get one, and I'd been up for one the year before to get one. And I think that particular the next year, they thought, oh, for goodness sake, we'll just give them this.
Oh.
So I got awarded a Fringe First.
No, but I'm sure you earned it because this is so prestigious. That is magnifique.
Thank you so much.
But let me ask you this. Did the fact that there was a problem the first year, the fact that you were a problem and some, about the material of trying to promote it, didn't that bring more attention? I mean, usually that's what happens. I mean, I would.
There was no such thing as bad publicity.
It's one of
I don't know. You could ask a few preachers around here that. I mean, I wouldn't ask the Duggars or some of these politicians, but still.
Westboro Baptist Church.
Well, I mean, yeah, I wish Westboro would pick at my show. Then I'd be everywhere, so that would be great.
Well, maybe we can try. Maybe getting me in Veronica Connie's is the first step towards them. There you go. That might be one of them in the background.
It would mean a lot to me. It really would.
Well, we shall work on you, Shelley. Will you not?
Thank you, my friend. All right, so you got some... But seriously though, did it help? Did it get you even more attention?
It didn't necessarily get us the right attention with the right people. If you think back to Lenny Bruce got a huge amount of attention towards the end of his career for his continual and consistent arrests and his trials, and that effectively ended his career, because while he was on the front page of every newspaper, no club could book him. No TV station or radio station would
talk
about him.
That was then, and this is now. Look,
you see, when I actually witnessed the arrest of the actors. I was walking up the Royal Mall, which is amazing, handing out leaflets because I had a one-man show on at the same time. And I watched a police car pull up, like a big Black Mariah, back doors of it opened, and a bunch of policemen stood around the actors who were handing out leaflets, stopped them handing these, and then two of them started arguing, so they bundled him in the back of the van and pulled off. And I was thinking, here I am in Britain, supposedly a relatively free country, at an international arts festival, and I've just watched something that you expect to see in South America at the height of Pinochet or in communist Russia.
Or during the Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. And I was thinking... What just happened? Just that really happened? They were not charged. Nothing happened. They were let go just in time for the show that evening. But it was a bit, like, kind of strange. And it did give... it meant also that we were at... this particular show was at one of the two premier venues in the festival. Uh-huh. And because they were getting under scrutiny, they kind of played down the publicity on the show. And it was quite hard to get a ticket. They were almost not collaborating with the theatre company. So it is one of those situations where, yes, we got lots of publicity, but it didn't necessarily spoil the takings.
Well, the thing is, you should have gotten it on tape, and then you can edit it any way you wish.
Well,
all right.
Absolutely.
Just like they do on the big time shows. Edit it any way you wish.
On reality TV.
Yes.
The fake reality TV does that all the time.
Veronique, I think I have one of your great fans on the line here.
Oh, magnifique.
And someone who was with the radio show. And I'm going to bring this gentleman on right now. Hello, this is Madame Perry. You are here at Madame Perry Salon with Jasper Bark and Mademoiselle Veronique Chevalier.
Who are you calling a gentleman? Really? I'm mortally insulted here.
Well, I knew
you
didn't bother to dress for the show,
on.
But look. All right, if you're not a gentleman, would you please identify yourself?
I'm James Breen, also known as Captain Darkfang. I think he is a little familiar with me. We've talked about
him. Oh, oui, Monsieur James Breen, of course. No, he's no gentleman. He's full of steam.
He knows this.
But anyway, bonsoir, Chérie. Merci beaucoup for tuning in.
Oh, but of course. I'm trying to talk Jennifer into switching over to my side, so, you know, all in's a good thing.
I feel the force pulling, you know. What do you think, guys? Should I go over to Dreadnought Radio? Is that
Ooh, naming names. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
That's
like you. The plug.
Oh, honey, I'm happy to plug you. You know. You know, I'm your Auntie Mame, darling, okay? So I'm happy to plug you.
No, you know what?
You
know what's really funny is I actually know the movie reference, so.
Listen, I did. I hope that you think the only Auntie Mame besides me is Rosalind Russell. I did an Ignite speech on lessons learned from Auntie Mame.
Oh, jeez.
I know. I could tell you're excited.
I've seen the movie
a few
times. Yeah,
I'm used to that overwhelming response.
I'm not huge on the classic movies. The girlfriend, she is. So, yeah, I've seen Auntie Mame a few times.
Oh, okay.
If she sees it on TV, guess what?
But you know what? For our viewers, for the few viewers, or listeners, who may not know you are, please introduce yourself and tell us about your show.
The show, heck, it's not just a show anymore. Used to be. Now it's 24/7 steampunk radio. But like I said, I'm James Captain Dark Fang Breen. I'm the owner of Dreadnought Radio. We were at one time the only 24/7 steampunk radio station I knew of, and then I found another one. So now all I can say is we're the first.
Well, and you're the best.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. I can hardly claim the best because, you know, I don't know what the other one sounds like, so.
Well, if you play me, then you're the best.
Well,
and you
yeah.
do. You do play Veronique, don't you?
Oh, of course. Of course.
And
well, she has all kinds of airplay.
What more is there to say?
What are your favorite Veronique songs?
I like Beer Hall. You know, that's just,
I
you
do,
know.
Too.
Well, I think that is my greatest
it's just
hit.
It's that song that gets me laughing. You know, I can be just pissed off at the world, and then I can put that on and I'm laughing by the end of it. So it's all good.
Ah, well, merci, chérie. You and Dr. Demento, they cannot both be wrong.
Oh, God, I remember listening to Dr. Demento. Oh, God.
Well, he had the good sense to play me on his show as well.
Yes. And I think that's pretty good cred.
Yes, of course.
In me opinion. So, do you know Jasper as well?
No,
Dark?
I don't, actually.
Okay.
No,
well,
he's, I
you
don't.
Also, you've never seen the video. I've posted this video, The Way of the Barefoot Zombie, a few times. And it's,
no, I haven't had a chance to see it. With my new work schedule, it's just been, you know, work and then usually come home and do a couple things. I'm passing out, so.
Yeah, and then, you know.
But I've got an entire month off coming up in a couple weeks, so it's all good.
Yes.
All right. Veronique, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to borrow your little instrument just a moment.
All right.
There we go. Okay, well, let's not let that happen again.
All right. Well,
are you okay?
Should we listen?
Are you okay?
Should we listen perhaps to some of my music?
I was just going to suggest that.
I'd love to hear some. It's really nice to meet you, by the way, James.
Same here.
All right.
Yes.
Are you going to stick around for a minute, James?
Oh, I suppose I can do that for you.
You might as well. Okay.
Eventually, I have to go make myself dinner, though. I do have to eat occasionally.
The elves do not make your dinner for you anymore?
What?
The elves are not making the dinner for you anymore?
No, she's got a thing she's got to go to. She's getting ready to leave again, so.
Oh. Oh. Well, Shelley, you are magnifique, and I am so happy that you came to see us.
Oh,
and
thank
you.
How could I not?
If you like this song, you'll like it even better when you see the fabulous cartoon for it. It's called Internet Date by Veronique Chevalier.
Internet date, won't it be great? Gee, I can't wait for my first internet date. Time to give it a whirl, 'cause I'm a new millennium girl. Now, I'll find my true love with the click of a mouse. Then I'll Google him before leaving the house. 'Cause computers don't lie, so I'm sure he'll be a great guy. Right? Put in my order for beefcake, not spam. What do you think that I got? A borderline geek with a Siberian tan, but his profile said he was hot. Friends on MySpace claim that this is a place to make dreams come true. It could happen for you, but the guys who add me are always under 18. Yikes! The rest are faking their age and their height and their weight by photoshopping the truth. They think it gives them more youth, but a lie is a lie. And what they're selling, I'm not willing to buy. I'm drifting in this cybernetic sea. How do I catch the perfect man for me? They put a man up on the moon. Why can't they beam him to my room? A giant step for all mankind. There's just one lonely girl behind. Found his Marge. Put in my order for beefcake, not spam. What do you think that I got? Another geek with a Siberian tan. Amused? Well, I'm certainly not. An internet date, I regret to relate, is not all that fun for a modern woman. But I found long-lasting joy with my own coin-operated boy.
Oh. Well, I still think the coin-operated boy is a much better bet these days.
Do you?
How many coins does it take, though, Veronique?
Ah, well, it depends on what you wish in return, shall we say.
No, really.
Certain services cost more, so I will let you imagine as you may.
Don't they always?
Fair enough.
And, you know, I think it's a good idea because, you know, I was saying, if forbid, you know, if I were to become single suddenly for whatever reason, I don't think I'd want to go through a bunch of romance again. I'd either want, I used to say I'd want just a very good professional date.
Yes.
You know, like they say, so that way you don't have to worry about, you know, will their friends like you, meet their family, have their mother disapprove of you and all that kind of stuff, or clean up behind them. So like they said, Charlie Sheen, when they asked him why he wrote checks to the Heidi Fleiss's group, he said, why do you pay for sex? You're famous. He goes, I don't pay for sex. I pay for them to go home when it's over. And I thought, that's exactly what I would want, someone to come do a fantastic job and take the money and go. You know, don't ask me to, you know, do stuff later and meet other people. Yeah, a professional, put the coin operated. Well done, I like that. How did you, you know, you, you've got so much more music that I love, and I've been posting your videos too lately. You're a parodist. And a musical comedian. Somebody sent me a question that said, how did Veronique's persona evolve into a mademoiselle?
Ah, well, you see, I used to be a ballet dancer many, many years ago. And, well, we do not make sound. Well, except for the clunking on the stage, you know, the pat, pat, pat on the little toe shoes. Well, I was on tour with our company. We were in Tehachapi, California, very small town. We had to make do with an outdoor stage and the lighting. It was a pickup truck with the drunk cowboy. And he got very excited during the Grand Pas de Deux of Swan Lake, and he shot out the headlights on the pickup, and the lights went dark, and I fell off the stage. And when I came to, I had forgotten everything except how to speak English with a French accent. And I forgot how to dance, and but I could sing. I could suddenly sing. But I couldn't sing the songs with their words, because to me, I make much better words than the songs that have the words already. So that is how I became a mademoiselle. And why I make parodies.
Hell, fantastic.
I am no stranger to parodies.
Well, I like them as well. And even they go better, you know, of course, the most famous one, Dr. Demento loves parodies like yourself and Weird Al Yankovic.
Parodies are fun. I've heard some really good parodies lately, so.
Well, I think it makes it more interesting.
I didn't feature a couple of them on Dreadnought, so.
Because people can always make a song, you know, that's no big deal. But to take the song and then to make another song from it that is even more clever, well, there you go. That is the art.
Jasper, are you a musician?
I'm not a musician in the slightest, but I have no musical talent whatsoever. I was also a professional performer for many years, though, and for a long while I lived in London, I was one of the foremost compares for musical events. I would just come on between bands as they spend endless hours setting up and noodling and things. I would stand and amuse the audience while they got on with that. And I must admit, there were a few bands, some of whom went on to become very famous, who asked me to front them, but I have no musical talent. I can't sing, I can't play anything at all. I have written, I was a comedian as well.
But you are you make lyrics, perhaps?
Yeah.
I did a lot of work writing sketches and exactly the same as you, rewriting the lyrics to existing tunes. And I for adult periodic shows, I even have an album of children's music where I rewrote the lyrics to nursery rhymes. So they would try and sound almost exactly like the original nursery rhyme, but they would be slightly altered.
Oh, that's magnificent, because that's a true art form.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how people don't realize how difficult it is to take an existing song, to keep the flavor of it, and then to completely rewrite it to give it an entirely new twist.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, because you are being humorous and because you're starting with an existing work, people assume that what you're doing is not as clever as it. Whereas you have to recreate everything that's brilliant about that song and then take it to another level. So it's the parodist, particularly the musical parodist, it's an undersung art form, I think.
Oh, yes, I agree. Well, I just, humor in general, people do not understand the seriousness of the humor until someone dies, like Robin Williams, and then we have to remember why it is so serious.
Yeah, and it is, and also there's timing, and there are beats when I was such a shy person, and I had a car accident, a very bad car accident on a birthday of mine, and I thought if I die today, what I want my obit to say, you know, that I've got this slack job and I've never done anything I wanted because I was too terrified, I was too shy, and so I decided to change things. I took a course in stand-up comedy.
Oh, many
features. And, thank you. I did that for a couple of years just to get over my nerves. And, of course, we would learn things like the shorter or the fewer syllables between the beginning of your line or joke, or whatever, and the punchline, the bigger the laugh.
Oh, yes.
It's a rhythm thing, which is why music often lends itself very well, but there's a different form of timing with music. But it's to do with rhythm. And fascinatingly enough, there are three art forms, none of which are given enough credit for how difficult and how clever they are, all of which are very, very similar, all of which are based on a similar thing. And that's humor, that's horror, which are the two areas I work in, and pornography. All of them are specifically geared. They're art forms that are specifically geared to give you a physical response. In horror, it's to make you scream or puke. In humor, it's to make you laugh. And in porn, obviously, we know what response that's supposed to give you.
well, with the Marquis de Sade, it's the same as humor. Horror, isn't it?
pretty much the same. Well, humor is incredibly close to horror as well. That's why the two go very, very well together. And horror writers
that is
are,
so
are,
true.
And vice versa. But they all depend upon, the whole purpose of timing is it's about building up tension and releasing it at the key moment. So getting someone to laugh is about building up the tension and then releasing it at the key moment, which is what timing is all about, which is all about the rhythm and getting all its anticipation. Horror is exactly the same. You build up the tension and you release it at the right moment. Only in this case, you want them to scream rather than laugh. And, of course, pornography or anything that involves getting someone off involves, once again, building up the tension at just the right moment and then releasing it.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So how's your porn career going, Monsieur Jasper?
My porn career? Well, I started off, the very first thing I ever had published was a piece of erotica, and of late, erotica's been sneaking more and more into my horror work, because again, the two go quite nicely together, and humour's always been a big element of it.
Mm.
And I never had any porn work, but for a brief while, when I was in my late 20s, I did work as a bottom model, which is, I was paid by various photographers and agencies to have photographs taken of my bottom.
Oh, how sweet! Do we have an archive that you would love to share with us?
Yes, really.
Maybe when we go offline. Yes, some of them are certainly not something I would show my mother.
Well, I'm not your mother.
Neither am I, big boy, so you can just bring it off.
Oh, yes, please. Is there a place where I need to put some coins to see these pictures?
I got a fistful of change right here, apparently. Ready to go. And then when we're through with that, I can get more.
Well, that was a... I shouldn't say it. I'm sorry, but this is so fun.
So could we see, is there some place we could see you, like in a movie, or
are these still images?
Yeah, a magazine or something, a video?
Of my bottom? Well, there are, I guess I'm naked in some of those Way of the Barefoot Zombie videos, but I'm trying to think, there isn't, as far as I'm aware, any photographs of my bottom on the internet. So there probably are, but I certainly haven't actually gone and looked for them, because you're not credited. They were just
right.
Various shots
True.
That were taken for a variety of purposes and magazines and things back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's a lovely, heartwarming story to tell your grandchildren.
Heartwarming,
it certainly
indeed.
Is. Gee, Grandpa. People need to take photographs of your bottom.
Why did you give me
Grandpa
that?
Grandpa was a bottom model.
Ah, Veronique, it was so touching. There wasn't a dry seat in the house. Now, where's my pocket rim shot?
Jeez.
How about this one? That'll be close enough, okay? Captain Dark Fang,
yes,
are you sure you
yes,
still want me
yes.
on your station?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. Well, good, because that gives me the perfect segue into I do have a little sponsor for tonight. You know, a lot of things about podcasts is that podcast people, and guys, feel free to comment on this. A lot of podcast people do tend to support each other and help each other, because since you can
mm-hmm.
listen anytime you want, you know, don't have to be competing for prime time or whatever, or who likes this better. There's room for all of us in the podcast world. And there are some folks, Julia and Nakul, who have a podcast called Better Choices, or Better Choices for Life. Better Choices for Life is a coaching guide, and the focus of the show is on giving you practical tips that you can start applying immediately after listening to their podcast. The first season, there are 12 episodes on focused on overcoming anxiety, and the first three episodes are already up. So, and that's the cool thing about podcasts like this one, you can listen to it over and over again. If someone says, I could have sworn, you know, Jasper said that you can see a picture of his batois en français, you can go download it on iTunes for free and hear just to be sure. And if you've got stage fright, they help you with public speak. So the point is that you can just do it over and over with podcasts. So this is, you got three episodes they have already out on public speaking, and I've checked them out. They're really good. Episodes 2, 3, and 4 focus on what to do before, during, and after your presentation and help you get better at public speaking. The hosts are Julia and Nicole, and they also offer one-on-one coaching via video conference. And, of course, everyone, all of you here on the show tonight can vouch for the fact that it may not be easy. Public speaking is not if you're good at it, You know, people think you're just a natural. But, yes, we do have to, you know, develop our technique and learn to get over certain stage fright and learn how to develop that rhythm and that beat, the organizations. And
Well, am I right? And not care.
Well, yes, and then your audience has to sit through that. But anyway, what they say is, they said to me, if you're struggling to overcome anxiety, Better Choices for Life is a self-help podcast, which is currently featured in the New and Noteworthy section on iTunes. That's pretty good. And it's created by these two people, Julia and Nicole, who are successful coaches and trainers with years of experience helping people all over the world improve their mindset and habits. And they bring together their experience in the show. So, in the New and Noteworthy section of iTunes, look for Better Choices for Life. Now, back to people who are teaching me more and more about their choices right now. I've got Veronique Chevalier, Weird Val. I have Jasper Bark, Jasper, I've got to say, you look so fine in that smoking jacket and Way of the Barefoot Zombie.
Well, thank you. I was going for the Hugh Hefner look, replete with the zombie bunnies.
I was about to say, it brought to mind immediately the Hugh Hefner of the zombie world with your little bunnies there. Have you seen that, Veronique?
I have not had the honor, but I shall do so.
Captain Darkfang?
Yes.
Have you seen it?
The picture?
No, the video
Barefoot
Zombie?
I'm trying to find it right now, actually, so.
Okay. All right.
I was scrolling Facebook looking for it.
All right. Veronique, would you give him his little pot? I want you to sit him down in a chair right now. Captain Darkwing, Dark Duck, Dark Fang, whatever. Go over there in the corner, sit down in your chair, and Veronique is going to strap you
in. I'm going to put you in the comfy chair.
Here you go.
You know what that means.
The crazy people I meet.
Just try to get out of that one, okay? You're lucky. We saved it for you. It could have been Jasper's, but it's yours.
They said this was going to be my big break. I thought they meant into show business, not balls, but there you go.
Okay, Veronique. What do you like most about this? I've got these questions coming in for people. What do you like most about the steampunk genre and working in it?
I like the steam.
Ooh.
It makes you very steamy.
No, that's right.
What I like so much, I think, to be quite serious and frank and to give them their due, the steampunks are, for the most part, wonderfully inventive folk. They are these odd ducks who fit nowhere else, and they've all found each other, and they love to celebrate creativity, whether it is making their costumes or the maker culture. I just have never met a more imaginative group of dumpster divers in my whole life, where they can just basically find this junk that nobody wishes, and they make the most magnifique inventions and outfit their entire home and make themselves entire wardrobes, and it's just wonderful. And then they love to share their tips of how they created these things. So going to steampunk conventions has been just an eye-opener. And again, the level of creativity and friendliness, you know, there's a few of those, the stereotype, the goths who found brown. Well, those are snooty, but those are in the minority. And for the most part, the steampunks are just very lovely, very inclusive. I see families where there's the grandparents and the children and the grandchildren, and they come to these conventions, and they're all in costume, and they're all happy to share their ideas. And it's just like, I would think, living in an earlier century where you would go to the country fair, or the, you know, and all the families from all the neighboring counties would meet, and it would just be very festive. Well, that is what steampunk has been for me.
Fantastic. Don't you think it's fascinating that what started out as a tiny little niche subgenre of science fiction has now morphed into both a lifestyle and a culture complete in and of itself?
Yes.
And it encompasses all branches of the arts now.
Yes,
yeah,
and it's...
Yeah.
It's become a countercultural revolution also. Because
I quite agree.
People are tired of the corporate sameness, clear channel music, Shakey's Pizza in every town, McDonald's in every continent. I think even the penguins have to eat Big Macs now. It's just horrible. So steampunk gives everyone the chance to be creative. We make our own persona. We make our own clothing. And it's just so much more interesting.
Do you think it's also quite interesting how steampunk is almost an attempt to reclaim our innocence? If you think about science fiction of the 50s and the 60s, it was very much to do with building a better tomorrow. And we all thought we were going to be living on the moon. Everybody thought they were going to have their own individual jet packs and flying cars, and the future was going to be the Jetsons. And instead, the future, somewhere in the 70s, moving into the 80s, became this hideous, dystopian, cyberpunk nightmare. And steampunk is almost a way of going back to a time of greater innocence and saying, well, let's build a future going in a completely different direction. Let's have a steam-driven future where technology and the way that human beings interrelate with each other is going to be completely different.
I agree. And also this push towards androgyny disturbs people. Like, Caitlyn Jenner. No. I want a gentleman to be a gentleman, and a lady can be a lady. I mean, I don't unapprove of people who want to be other genders, but I don't believe that should be held as the benchmark. You know, now what I love about steampunk is the gentlemen. They wear the suits. They look handsome because everyone knows that clothes make the man. And the ladies with the corsets, they look sexy. They got the bosoms up in their chin. It's magnifique, you know. And what isn't to like? It's elegant. We can tell the difference, and we can have tea.
Celebrate curves as well.
Exactly.
Making everybody have to wear kind of clothes that fit best on a lampshade or a broomstick.
Right. Exactly. So yes, I like that. I mean, not to be sexist, because I don't believe that there should be for enforcement of sex roles, but I think that ladies and gentlemen kind of enjoy the difference. It makes it more charming.
You know, or as you French say, vive la différence.
Oui, oui.
Well, just to back up a sec here, because you're talking about, and not in the way of Jasper's former career, but just to back up to the topic of the future, I was telling a German producer, 3D Taurus, the other day about the song Future by Todd Rundgren. I don't know if any of you are Todd Rundgren fans.
Yes.
Like, I'm trying to remember that song, though.
Well, this is a song that came out, I think, in the, it might have been the, not the Arena album, but I'm not sure, but this was one of them came out about 5 years ago. And, I think it was, whatever. It's the one where you're sitting on the front like a bunny rabbit eating Easter eggs. But the song Future, was about how people of our generation, I'm closer to Todd's age, was, as kids, that's what we thought. We thought we were going to live on other planets, and we thought we were going to have flying cars, and we thought it was all going to be like the Jetsons. And even in the song, Todd says, I remember the future, the world of tomorrow, when we were supposed to have a house on Mars, I was supposed to have a flying car. And that's what we thought. But when you talk about the steampunk culture, don't you have a book, Veronique, called Steampunk as a Superculture?
Well, that is one thing I have been working on. I have been presenting panels across the U.S., talking about this with different personalities of the steampunk superculture. And I coined the term superculture because, unlike
subculture such as the Gothic culture, which is very homogenous, steampunk is inventing itself as it goes along because it is drawing these members from all of these walks of life and all of these other cultures, and we are becoming much more than the sum total of our individual parts, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think yes, because when you think about the goth, it's like everyone dresses, it's like every other fad that's come along, like the nonconformist of the 60s or whatever, the beatniks, or the goth of the 90s through today, they want to be different, so they all dress just alike. Whereas,
exactly.
Yeah, so everybody looks like Robert Smith from The Cure, you know, or Susie. But then, with steampunk, though, there are so many variations, and there's within the genre of how people dress, and there's so much more individuality.
Well, and then there's the Nazis who want to dictate what steampunk is and isn't, and, you know, and there's a whole joke about glue some gears on it and call it steampunk, and it's a fabulous video if you haven't seen it, because, you know, there's that other extreme. Someone did they took images from Etsy, site and said and called it not remotely steampunk, and then they showed all of these things that people are selling as quote unquote steampunk, and they aren't. So it can be definitely misconstrued and done poorly, but you know, that so it is with anything.
Tell us about Sprocky Spittoon.
Well, Sprocky Spittoon is a parody of the Beatles Rocky Raccoon, and he's a little steam powered robot. And he falls in love with, just as Rocky Raccoon falls in love, Sparky falls in love, and he finds a rival in the process. And it also comes to a duel, but the outcome is a bit different. And so I was really pleased with the song. And my collaborator with the Internet Date, who did the cartoon, Kyle Carosa, is a freelance artist who has worked with Nickelodeon and the Cartoon Network. And
I'm glad you mentioned Kyle Carosa because his work is fantastic.
Yes. And he does music as well. He does Mad Music, and that's actually how we met, was through our music, because we are both diehard Dr. Demento fans. But anyway, I found out he did the cartoons, so I asked him to work with me. And it's very funny because Internet Date, I had to beg and plead and send him coins. He's a coin-operated boy, I guess, and all of these things to bribe him. And he finally make Internet Date. And then Dr. Demento play my song, The Beer Hall in Hell. And all of a sudden, then for another project, Kyle comes to me and he's, Veronique, would you like me to make for you another video? And I'm going, well, I don't know. Now that Dr. Demento has played me and he has not played you, I do not know that you are worthy. But anyway, but he makes this other video, and I'm very proud. I took it to film festivals in all last year, and we were very well received, and we got the Audience Choice Award for Best Animated Film at Brevard International Film Festival, so we are very proud. We've been winning some awards for this work. And unfortunately now, Monsieur Kyle is so famous that he has no more time for me, but I am very, very proud to have worked with him, and I hope that he is very, very successful. Successful, something like that. All of that and more.
Say what you really mean. Perfectly.
So,
is that why you wrote My Cog is Bigger Than Your Cog?
Well, I don't know why I wrote that. That's another that's another project. That has not been released yet because I am still trying to find out the best way to do this. My problem, as Veronique, is that I do many things. I did also the Pocahontas, a spectacular compilation, which is a humorous horror world music project with all different artists. Then I do my little cartoons. Then I do my steampunk. Then I do my panels at comic book conventions. So I do not have the elevator speech. I need many elevators for all my speeches.
Cool.
So I
know about that.
So I'm trying to sort of narrow it down because I'm actually working on a new character to perform as a male. Because during the Victorian era at the music halls, male illusionists were very popular. And what a male illusionist was a woman dressed all in a man's outfit, sitting on the stage smoking and with their legs crossed and apart, you know. And this was so titillating for the Victorian ladies. Here they are all, you know, covered from head to toe. So I'm trying to create a steampunk male illusionist persona.
Fantastic.
So he's named Baron Haikyuu. And there's a whole, and this is for real, there's a whole subculture within steampunk of glamour dandies. And these are these fabulous gay men that are all magnifique couturiers. And they make the just most smashing attire. So they have sort of adopted me as their honorary Liza Minnelli. And they have made for me a beautiful suit. So I feel like I would like to do them honor by creating this masculine persona with a handlebar mustache, of course, and, you know, to create this presentation to give at conventions or clubs or even perhaps fringe festivals.
That's a great idea.
Will
you have a steam-driven codpiece?
Pardon?
Will you have a steam-driven codpiece?
I actually do have a cod piece, but if you can tell me how to put steam in it, then I will happily have a steam.
You're asking me to put some steam in your cod piece, Ronnie. We are on air, you realize.
Well, perhaps if you just show
people
me some of those photos of when you were a bottom model, that would do the trick.
I've already tweeted that we're discussing the career of Jasper's Batois, okay? So, I don't know.
No. Yeah,
how will we know it's you?
Me
is there
now,
any kind of a, is there a freckle, a tattoo? How will we know it's you?
There isn't any specifically identifying features. I would have to dig out a photograph. I wouldn't show it to you, and you'd have to compare a cheek-to-cheek comparison.
You know, actually, you know, I'm currently reading, and this is actually, like, this doesn't seem to be off the subject. Spear of Destiny.
Right, that's a that was one of my earlier works.
What made me think of that? Okay.
Oh.
So we've gone from bottoms to spears.
We've gone from putting steam
but,
in
by way
piece
of
steam-driven spear.
Cod
that's
pieces.
Which is what, dear?
I said by way of steam-driven cod pieces.
Exactly.
Spear of Destiny. It's one of my earlier books. It was a book I was asked to write as opposed to a dream project I thought I'll do. My publisher wanted something that they described as a cross between Jean Le Carré and The Professionals. I don't know if you know The Professionals, if you ever watched that. It's a British program that's very much in the sort of the spy genre, such as I think I Spy would be a good comparison, except
The Man from
anyway.
Uncle. The Man from Uncle. Remember that?
It's kind of a little bit. It's kind of a little bit rough and gritty, and it was nasty. It was about a branch of the British Secret Service who were particularly blue collar, and when you wanted the guys to come in and just punch lots of people. So he wanted a cross between an espionage novel and a kind of slightly. So that was what Spear of Destiny was intended to be, and it was me learning how to write novels. Really, I was lucky enough to be paid to learn how to write novels back in the day when you used to be paid for that sort of thing. But it's not my finest hour, but it's certainly lots of fun.
I'm certainly enjoying it.
Well, thank you.
And I like Le Carré so very much.
I do too.
And David Baldacci, who some people, you know, snicker at, but I like that, and I love it. And two, you give me a lot of imagery. You give me enough imagery to see and feel that I see what's happening without being over, you know, without getting boring. Like, especially when you talk about when the sniper on the building, and he waits until the guy in the middle is laughing and his head's back and shoots down his throat, I guess, like into his uvula, And so his friends think he's just falling down laughing, and it gives him a few seconds while he's, you know, getting his next target. I mean, I like it. But that's just me.
Thank you. I did a lot of research into all that, interestingly, and quite a few members of my family were in the armed forces. And it wasn't until I'd written the novel and I gave it to my father, who'd also, he'd done a tour of duty in Korea. He said, oh, he said, you know, your granddad, he said, he was a sharpshooter. So apparently, my grandfather, my father's father, was a World War One sharpshooter.
Ah, they say what you know, and you genetically knew.
I did, yes. I think it was coming through from the ancestors.
Ah.
Yeah, because to write about that time and the scenery and put it where you could see everything, I thought you had to have a legit source.
I do a lot of research. I do a lot for most things that I write, even though, interestingly enough, I write about a lot of supernatural and strange otherworldly things. In order to sell that, in order that people will believe you, I think you have to have all your other details absolutely rock solid. And that involves both the emotions of your characters. They have to be very real. They have to, in order to engage the reader. And if you are setting it in a particular time, in a particular place, you need to know everything about that so you can get all the details right. Because the last thing you want is for the reader to get halfway through your novel and then to have the spell broken because you've got one tiny little thing wrong. Somebody wouldn't use that particular piece of dialect in that part of the world, or somebody wouldn't have worn that type of clothes. That just... I hate when that happens, and that pushes your reader out of the book. So I'm meticulous in my research.
But they say the devil is in the details, and that is so
absolutely
true.
Absolutely. Yeah, and he's certainly biting your butt when you're writing. Well, when I write, anyway.
But you've got a new graphic novel out called Bloodfellas. You mentioned it
That's
earlier.
Right.
Why don't you tell us more about that?
It's an homage to the... fabulous horror and crime comics that ended up being banned from the 1950s. EC is the most famous one, and that gave birth to the television series in the 80s and 90s, Tales from the Crypt. They were all based on the original comics from the 1950s. And these comics were so brilliantly done. They were so shocking. They were so clever. They terrified the nation. And there were Senate hearings. Senator Estes Kefauva, I think that's how you pronounce his name, who was a presidential hopeful at that point and a national star who'd brought down mob bosses, went on television to discuss these comics. And they were all totally shut down. But aficionados of comics, generally speaking, hold them up as a high point in the medium. So this book is something of an homage to that. It's set in the 1930s, in the Prohibition era. And it's in the imaginary town of Atros City. And Atros City is basically in the control of the Zombioso, who are the undead mafia. And they have gained control of the city through sales of a drug called Ascension, which is a mystical drug which allows your soul to leave your body and for a brief second to catch a brief glimpse of heaven. And it's a hard-boiled, gritty noir with zombies. The zombies, of course, are a metaphor for the dehumanizing nature of violence and men who wield power through violence. But on the one hand, it's a great, giant, great, pulp-tastic, nasty, gritty, grim, horror, crime mashup. On the other hand, it's quite a profound examination of the redemptive nature of faith. And that's available on Amazon and from all good book and comic shops. And that's called Bloodfellas. And I also have to mention my amazing cover artist, Rob Moran, and the interior artists, Mick Trimble and Alyosha Tomic, who did an amazing job on the artwork.
Fantastic. Yes, definitely give credit to these fantastic artists and collaborators.
And I have a question, because the first thing I thought of when I saw the title was Goodfellas, you know, the film. The mafia, fantastic classic film. So I guess that's kind of related.
That was, again, purposefully. What I've done with the story is cross-pollinated genres. I've taken standard tropes that you would normally see in a gangster movie, such such as the young son who inherits unwillingly inherits a criminal empire and has to and is slowly corrupted by it, and the giant great land grabs that you might see, such as in Chinatown, and I've repurposed it to fit in a horror story. So it's a standard gangster crime story, but it's set in a supernatural horror world. So in doing so, by cross-pollinating, you actually create something slightly different, and original has been a word that's been used by lots of the critics, by placing the two things together. And so you recreate each genre by superimposing one upon the other.
I think that's a funny
thing. That just sounds really cool, because, you know, intelligent zombies.
When I write zombies, I've written one other book about zombies. I don't tend to use the normal post-apocalyptic world that you see in The Walking Dead. I go right back to the old school voodoo zombies, and so these are zombies who can walk and talk and think, and this is actually achieved through voodoo. And also, I did a load of research into voodoo and actually got to meet a lot of voodoo practitioners, because it's the fastest-growing religion. And so the kind of the rationale behind it is based on real voodoo.
Oh,
very cool.
So I've somewhat tried to reinvent the zombie. I think there's a little bit too much zombies around there. And the book has been, unfortunately, been a long time in planning. It's been one of those projects that just... had to get over a lot of hurdles to finally get in front of the general public, but along the way, so the zombies kind of grew hugely in popularity. As I was trying to get this book out, it went through two different creative teams and three different publishers before it finally hit the newsstands. but anyway, it's certainly zombies as you have never seen them before.
Well, magnifique. I look forward to that. I'm so tired of the old same zombies, the generic zombies.
Running around. It's getting boring.
Brains.
Yep. Well,
it's kind of like science fiction movies in general just turned, you know, boring. I mean, come on. Who's loving all the reboots? Gee, okay, I'm not alone in really thinking that the reboots need to go away.
Yes, it's
now,
nice to have...
Madam Claire, I know you've seen the little clip I sent, but I don't know if V or... I'm sorry, I'm horrible with names.
Jasper.
Jasper, thank you.
He's been here all night,
it.
Okay.
I know, this is me, okay?
I'm just playing with you.
It took me a few weeks to get to know the names of the people I work with and see every day.
So Jasper Bark, everyone, Jasper Bark.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about Bark's Bottom earlier, but so Jasper, okay?
Yes, Bark's Bottom.
There's actually
a movie being put together right now.
About?
It's a steampunk-inspired movie. Just kind of think, you know, Mad Max. When I say Mad Max, I'm talking, you know, Mel Gibson, you know, real Mad Max meets Firefly. Yes, very post-apocalyptic. And I know, I know Madam Perry's seen the clip because I sent it to her, but throughout that clip, there are some very familiar faces from the steampunk community in this movie, namely Captain Cedric Whittaker, Zombie, Amelia Whittaker, Attica Valora, and other several members of Airship Isabella.
Ah.
They are acting in the movie as well as making props for the movie.
Oh, magnifique.
And
how brilliant.
Do you have parts for all of us in there?
Do I have what?
Parts.
I don't, but no, that's Drew. You know, I have to talk to Drew. Drew Hall, he's the writer-director of Ether.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, fantastic gentleman. And Madam Perry will be getting to find that out soon enough because, yeah, I'm not going to give it away. That's a special one. That'll be another show I call in for, though, because, you know, it's true, and Drew's awesome.
It's true. It's true.
It's true. It's true. Jasper, where did you...
May I love
yeah,
one of the work?
That's true.
Yeah, V and Jasper, well, V, you can get the, you know, you can get the link to the clip from me or from Madam Perry. Jasper, since I don't have you on Facebook at all, I, you know, I'm sure Madam Perry would be more than happy to share that link with you.
I certainly will. Because
we're definitely trying to take back sci-fi. It's the whole point behind Ether.
Well, when I take my next trip back up to North Carolina, I'll leave it where I leave all my special notes on the third stall wall of the Love's Truck Stop at Exit 4 in South Carolina. So I'll put them.
Oh, that's one of my favorite truck stops.
We need to get
y'all
out here to Tucson. We need to get y'all out here to Tucson in March for Wawa Westcon.
Okay.
That's what we need to do.
Absolutely.
Yes. We'll do the show live from there. I
actually did that this past while I was kind of attempted to. There was no Wi-Fi I could get to, unfortunately. But the folks who run Wild West kind of trying to take care of that, you know, remedy that situation for this year coming up.
And when?
We take over Old Tucson Studios here in Tucson, Arizona. It is the most immersive convention I've ever been to because, you know, every other convention.
Well, have you been to TeslaCon though?
No, but. You know,
TeslaCon is the most...
Well, that's also in a hotel, isn't it, or a convention center?
Yes, but Lord Bobbins makes it... I mean, he used to work for Lucasfilms, so...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The big thing with TeslaCon is
we've got an entire Old West movie studio set. The entire Old Tucson Studios we utilize. So it's not, you know, you're not just in some convention center, in some hotel. You have all of Old Tucson to wander around. We've got, you know, panels and performances and whatnot in all the different buildings.
Oh,
so you're not confined indoors.
Oh, we got to be there.
Con crud does not exist there because we're not all clamped together inside. We're outside, the fresh air. Con crud doesn't exist. And we always have great concerts. I mean, this past year. On Friday night, we had the Cog is Dead and Steam Power Giraffe. I mean, come on. And then, you know, just when you think you can't get any better, Saturday night, we had Frenching the Punk in Abney Park.
Did you know that Mademoiselle performed there?
What?
Mademoiselle was a guest there in 2011.
Oh, that's right, yeah, because my girlfriend met her. And I wasn't there because I had to work. I remember Amber telling me about that, actually.
Well, you need
but
to
that
get
that was before
out
the current management.
And we need to be there. You need to get Jasper, Veronique, myself. I would say go ahead and crank up the Kickstarter so you could afford us. But I think at this point we're going to be able to sell pictures of
Jasper's
boutoir. And
we'll all get rich.
Oh, Chasse de Poussoir, I just say Batois. And, you know, I'm picking up the Sprint already. And, you know, for a plane ticket, Veronique and I might show you something. I'm not sure what, but.
Well, V, you're
I'll show you the
Bill
Hall
in here. Hey, V, you're in California, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
I'm in California.
I'm in California.
I can drive
it out. Do you know Poplock Holmes or Unwoman?
Oh, yes. I've performed with both of them.
Poplock has been out here every year for the past 3 years for Wawa Westcon. He plans on being out here again this year coming up. This past year, he brought Erica with him, actually.
Uh-huh. Yes, I've performed with them all over the place.
Yeah, they are both just fantastic people. I love them both to death. Wow. Poplock and I have gotten to be pretty close over the past few years since we met at, WestCon 3 years ago.
Well, good.
And so, yeah, he's such a great guy. I mean, Gerald, I've got some great pictures with him from Wawa WestCon this year. including one where he sits here and decides at the last minute to turn around and grab me from behind a bear hug, and yeah. This is just out the picture.
What kind of show do you think this is? All right, we're all in the room, and I still need to talk more to Jasper Bark about his Battle Cries, A Way of the Barefoot Stomp, Dawn Over Doomsday, and...
I need to find out where to get his books, because I
Amazon.
Need some new stuff to read.
Dawn Over Amazon. And I would bring this whole our whole party down here to Atlanta. Tyler Perry is about to buy out Fort Mac, the old Army fort, and make Tyler Perry Studios there. But we'd have to have Madea
in
there, the zombie or something. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I plug as well?
I wish you would.
Collection of short stories out as well at the moment from Crystal Lake Publishing, called Stuck on You and Other Prime Cuts. Which is a collection of dark, humorous, erotic, and sometimes quite visceral and gruesome horror.
Well, my favorite combination.
Ooh, gruesome horror is always good. Yes, gruesome horror.
Yeah, in fact, Jasper, why don't you, just right now, since we don't have a lot of time left, I would like for you just to right now, for the next maybe two and a half or 3 minutes, tell us about your... all of your books, just go through the catalog, what we should buy. We can get them all on Amazon. And then Crystal Lake Publishing, that's Joe Menhart's group.
That's right, which is
and Joe hasn't called in tonight, has he?
I don't think so, but I think it's way past his bedtime. Joe is an amazing, hardworking individual, and he started up what will be called a small press, which is punching way above its weight with some some hugely well best-selling books with
it's
some amazing authors. He's got an incredible back catalogue. But yeah, he's over in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
And I think they're all fast asleep right now.
All right, so
yeah,
tell us more. Give us your list right now, Jasper.
So, the first thing I ever had published was. A book of performance poems called Bark Bites. That's many, many years ago. I also wrote a space opera called A Fistful of Strontium. There's the Sniper Elite, which you mentioned. There's a post-apocalyptic book called Dawn Over Doomsday. There was the aforementioned Way of the Barefoot Zombie, which was very, very well received. There was Stuck on You and Other Prime Cuts, which has had nothing so far but rave reviews, and all 5-star reviews on both Goodreads and Amazon. There's the Bloodfellas, which is also about, and once again, that's received absolutely rave reviews so far, fingers crossed. In addition to that, in terms of children's books, there was the Battle Cries series. There are 6 in that particular series. I wrote a series of children's poems called Universary Rhymes. I have a children's book called for preschoolers, all about imaginary friends, called Mr. Wasnotties. There is the pop-up book called Inventions, Leonardo da Vinci, which appears to be one of Leonardo's lost notebooks. And when you open up each of the pages, it's individual inventions that are recreated on the page, including a fully working 15th century robot that he built, which was an automaton, which moved and even spoke, I understand, built inside a suit of armor. And we were the plans for this were almost lost. They were rediscovered by a leading scholar called Pendretti, and we were the first people to actually recreate and show what it would have looked like. And so that was the best seller in France and in Italy. Trying to list other books that I've done. That's all off the top of my head that I can think of.
Well, that's a lot. I am so honored to share this show with you, Monsieur.
Well, thank you so much. The honor is completely mutual.
It is my honor as well to share to have both of you as guests, Mademoiselle Chevalier, Jasper Bark. I am so delighted to have you here.
Can I just mention one other thing?
Yes.
Because I work for a whole lot of publishers, and if any of them tune in,
I work for an American publisher called Silver Phoenix Entertainment, and I've just written a series of comic books for them called Roller Derby Drama, which is a very off-the-wall superhero strip about super-powered roller derby girls.
Oh my God, that's so magnifique! Because roller derby is getting so popular again.
Oh yeah.
It's interesting because I didn't know much about it when the publisher contacted me and asked me to write it. But it was only just beginning to become popular over in the UK. And I have two daughters, 14 and 11, and we've all become huge roller derby fans. It's absolutely fabulous sport.
Yes, it's very popular, as you know, here in the States. And in fact, you know, you see my picture there on it. See, I didn't have anything that could quite compete with you guys as far or to live up to your standards as far as the horror steampunk genre. So I've got that picture of me there in front of Reptoid, which is a monster truck.
Yeah,
did you see that picture? Did you look at it? Did you see it?
Oh, we did. It's a fabulous picture. And actually, both you and Veronique are looking gorgeous.
Well, that's me. Oh, Veronique always looks gorgeous. Well, anyway, I've sung the national anthem.
But you're not so shabby yourself.
At the
sang the national anthem. Oh, mon Dieu!
Wait! at the monster truck jam, which is why that picture was made. And I've done that several times. But I've also sung the national anthem at a roller derby. And my good friend, her name is Mary Castle, but her roller derby name is Quadratic Abrasion. She's has a PhD in mathematics, teaches at Kennesaw University. Her husband says she got the PhD and got drafted into the roller derby the same week and was more excited about the roller derby. So,
but naturally.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
May we. So, guys, it seems like this has gone by. Jasper Bart, thank you for DJ Dark Fang, Dreadnought Radio, for calling in and talking about the movie Ether. Jasper Bark and Veronique Chevalier, I am so honored to know both of you and that you both took time to come to Madame Perry's Salon. Looks a little bit like the inside of Jeannie's bottle, doesn't it? But thank you both so much for coming here tonight and being my guest. If I can do anything for you, I'll be putting your books and your websites and your links all over my social media, so that everyone can find you.
Thank you so much.
Should we release Jasper from the chair now, do you think?
If you wouldn't mind. Well, at least take the chastity belt off.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we'll think about it.
You're so sweet. That's a thoughtful of you. And then flip him over.
Oh, yes. We have to look at the bottom first.
All right, so this bottom is everybody because, you know, the download of this show is free, and Jasper's bottom is not free. So,
that's true.
So
you must
admit
I've got a great bottom for radio, though, haven't I?
The best bottom in the business.
It's don't know if I've got a great face for radio, but the bottom.
And you may say, oh, a bottom, but honey, he's a power bottom.
That's
thank
right.
You for
he's the best sounding bottom in radio.
All right. Everyone say goodbye to your audience. Goodbye.
Bonsoir.
Au revoir.
Okay. And be back here Tuesday night with my guest to be Buddy Good John. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.